take it. I love the familiarity of Christmas. There's the same quality of jokes each year. You probably already know about Mary and Joseph. They had a stable relationship. You may have wondered about how they knew how heavy the baby was. Well, that's because they had a way in the manger. Those Advent calendars, you know, they're getting a bit harder to find each year. That's because their days are numbered. But my real favorite, this is the interactive part, knock, knock.
Mary.
Mary. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Brilliant. In fact, this one's for the musicians. Why did the turkey join the band? Because he had the drumsticks. There we are. Okay, so you got the sort of familiarity there. Then there's the familiarity with Santa. Although I must say, in our family, we usually feel a little bit let down by Santa. I've actually got a photocopy. It had to be a photocopy because the real one obviously got posted off. Written by our youngest son. And this was written a couple of weeks ago. And I just need to put this in a bit of context. A year ago, Freddie wrote to Santa, and he said, "Dear Santa, please could I have a dog?" And sure enough, he duly received a dog. It was this sweet little thing, very cute, obedient, and battery-operated. And dissatisfied with this, he's learned his lesson, and this year he's been a bit more specific. So here, let me read from the photocopy. "Dear Santa, please may I, Freddie, have a real dog for Christmas. Thank you, love from Freddie." And then, obviously feeling a bit guilty about his behavior during the year, he writes on the other side, are there any things I should be working on at the moment? Brilliant. That's the familiarity of Christmas. But when we actually go back to the first Christmas, it's not reassuringly familiar, but rather was full of breathtaking surprises. And in this passage, which I hope you were given on the way in, a little copy of that, if you can just fish it out, and I'll refer to it as we go through, there are three particular surprises which all center around the baby who was born that first Christmas time. Here's the first surprise, that he was a humble king born in Bethlehem. In our world, we're very conscious of rulers, autocrats perhaps, who drive around in their 4x4s while the people they rule over starve. But here we are introduced to someone who is the mightiest of all kings, and yet who is amazingly, completely, genuinely, and delightfully humble with it. Let me read from verse 1. "After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, 'Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him.' When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. Then he called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, and he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. 'In Bethlehem in Judea,' they replied, 'for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.'" This is amazing. Hundreds of years before Jesus Christ was born, it had been predicted that a king would come. Out of you, Bethlehem, will come a ruler. That is, God had promised to send a king into this world. He would be a king who would mend the broken pieces of this world and would put them back together again. And when Jesus grew up into a man, this is exactly what you see in his life. Everywhere he goes, he puts the broken pieces of the world back into place again. Confronted with the deaf, the blind, the lame, the sick, Jesus heals them all just with a word. If he was here today in Christchurch, he could walk into Christchurch Hospital and empty the whole place. The world has never seen anything like it before or since. It was astonishing. And even when Jesus was confronted by death, he was able to do what no other person in history has been able to do. We're told about one incident when he was walking along and he heard the sound of a funeral. And he came around the corner, and sure enough, and we're told that the person who was at the front of the funeral, the woman who was standing there, was a widow. And in the box was her only son. She was a widow. She'd lost her husband. She only had one son, and he was gone as well. She was as good as dead. And Jesus stops the funeral cortege and goes up to them and knocks on the coffin and says, "Young man, get up." The lid lifts off. The boy sits up, and Jesus gives him back to his mother. You have to be pretty confident before you start doing that in public. And Jesus knew who he was. Here was the King of Kings who had come into this world. Jesus Christ, a mighty King, unique in power. The King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, unique. When I was growing up, one of the highlights was going around the town Christmas shopping in the run-up to the 25th. The shopping itself was average, of course, but the highlight was the hope of meeting Santa himself. And finally, we get to the appointed department store and able to have a few private words with the big man. And it just seemed incredible to me, even as a kid really, that out of all the places in the world that he could have chosen to go, Santa had decided to come to Stoke-on-Trent for the second year running. I mean, what are the chances of that? But then it got a bit confusing, because you go on to the next place, and the next place, and the next place, and he seemed to have multiplied up. Whereas Jesus Christ was truly unique. Here is the only King who could truly put this world back together again. He is the only person who has been able to defeat death. He is the only King who himself has been raised from the dead. Jesus Christ, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And as it says in that passage, a shepherd. Out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. That's what a shepherd does for his sheep. He looks after them. He leads them. And Jesus Christ will come as a shepherd to lead people back to the living God. By ourselves, we don't even know if God exists. Your guess is as good as my guess, as good as the guess of the person next to us. But Jesus Christ cuts through the confusion and comes into this world to lead us back to the living God. It's our broken relationship with God which is the cause of a broken world. And Jesus Christ came as the mighty shepherd to lead us back to God and restore that relationship. Because you come to Jesus, you come to God. You come to know Jesus, you come to know God. Now the surprise was that he would be born in Bethlehem. I said there were three surprises. Here is the first one, that he was a humble king who would be born in Bethlehem. And the reason that's a surprise is because Bethlehem was like a nothing place, a nowhereville. And this precious royal child was to be born there. And he would be born in this tiny place and then laid in a feeding trough and visited by these overseas guests. And it's a very strange thing when you think about it. Why, of all the places in the world, I mean, just this year, Harry and Meghan had their royal baby, you know, swarms of reporters and taken care of in the best hospital and that sort of thing. Why would God arrange his son to be born in a stable and laid in a feeding trough? I mean, in our language, it would be like him being born in a local bus shelter and laid in a recycling bin and then visited by some drivers from, you know, Gold Cars taxi service or something, come around the corner to see him. Why did God do it this way? For a very clear reason, to show us that this would be a humble king. That though Jesus is the greatest, though he holds your future and mine in his hands, you may not have realized that, we only keep breathing because he allows us to keep breathing. When we die and this world is gone and this life is gone, he is the person we will meet. He is the judge of every person in this world. Though he is the greatest, yet he is also the most humble. And that first Christmas time, he left the palace of heaven and came down into this world to serve us and to bring us back to God that we may one day go to heaven if we come to trust him. Although he was mighty God himself, he shrank himself down into a baby. The infinite became an infant. And he did it because he loves us. He loves you and wants each of us to come back to knowing him. And this Christmas time, he stands ready to serve any of us who ask him. He wants us to enjoy the pleasure of having him as our guiding king, as our saving Christ, and as our caring shepherd. He is a humble king born in Bethlehem. Then we see that he was a despised king, hated by Herod. Have a look at verse 3. We read in verse 3 that when King Herod heard this, the birth of the baby, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. Of course he was. Herod himself was a king. Herod had been put in place by the Romans to rule over the Jewish people in this area. He wasn't a king by birth, he was a puppet king. And he saw in Jesus a threat to his own power. Now, you might put that down to Herod being a little bit oversensitive, and it's true, he was absolutely paranoid. He'd already had killed his wife, his mother-in-law, his brother-in-law, and his two sons in order for him to cling to his power. So he was paranoid. But you'll see in verse 3, it actually says, when King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. Herod wasn't the only one who felt this way. The common reaction of people was to fear Jesus Christ. And you know what? That's how it's been ever since. Why is it that so many people today want to keep Jesus Christ at arm's length? Why is it that you can use almost any word that's in the English language, and a few that really shouldn't be in the English language, and no one bats an eyelid, but you say the word Jesus, and suddenly some people get uncomfortable? Well, I'll tell you why it is. It's because people don't want Jesus disturbing their own little kingdoms. We want to be kings over our own lives. In fact, let me prove to you that you already see yourself as a king over your life, because if I ask you the question, who's got the right to tell you how to live? Who's got the right to tell you how to live? If you're anything like me, you say, well, no one. It's my life. Exactly. No one. Not even God. Who made you? We have pushed him out. We don't want him to be the king over us. No wonder Herod didn't want Jesus. And the tragedy was that if only Herod had submitted to Jesus and believed in him and accepted him, he could have had Jesus as his loving savior, caring shepherd, and servant king. And that is true for any of us. Jesus Christ offers himself to come and put us right with God and to guide us in life. And we need to be put right with God. Because as it stands, we're against him. If I'm the king over my life and Jesus is the king, who do you think will be king when we meet? You can only have one king. Do I really think I can beat Jesus Christ at his own game? When we meet, there will be only one winner. That's why it's a problem looking ahead if I don't know Jesus Christ. You can have a wonderful time in this life and ignore Jesus Christ. That's because he's so generous and keeps on giving us all the good things. But if nothing's solved on the day when we meet him, we're in terrible trouble. Now, Herod kept on and on and on. He didn't want to bow down before anyone else, have someone else rule his life. He pretended, of course, to want to worship the baby. You have a look at verse 7. Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me, so I too may go and worship him. I mean, sounds good, doesn't it? He said that he wanted to go and worship him, and truth be told, we can be a little bit the same. Go to church? Sure, I'll go to church. Once a year, twice a year. Don't mind singing a few of your songs, and Jesus, I quite like your book, actually. But for some of us, we have no intention of actually shifting out of the driver's seat and letting Jesus Christ drive our car, the car of our lives. I wonder if that's you this Christmas time, gobbling up his good gifts while keeping him at arm's length. That's what Herod was like. Jesus Christ was hated by Herod. He was a despised king, and he's equally despised by many people today. And then thirdly, the third surprise, Jesus Christ was a glorious king, worshipped by wise men. We read in verse 1 that Magi from the east came to Jerusalem, and they asked, where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? Now, these Magi, they weren't kings as sometimes is portrayed, but they were more like astrologers, or as we might think of them, early scientists. And they came from the east, probably from Persia or modern-day Iran, and they were drawn to search out Jesus Christ in fulfillment of Old Testament prophecy, which said that nations would come and bow down before this special baby. So when they came, they weren't coming because they were looking for a baby. There were plenty of babies in Persia. The reason they made this arduous journey through inhospitable terrain over many hundreds of miles was because they were coming to see a king who had come into this world to save people. No wonder we read in verse 10 that when they saw the star, they were overjoyed, overjoyed. They were getting close, within touching distance of this mighty king. And when they saw him, they bowed down and worshipped him. They worshipped him because they knew that this baby was worthy of worship. And you see the presents that they brought. They brought gold, gold fit for a king, for here was the King of Kings. They brought incense fit for God himself, for here was God come down to earth. And they brought myrrh fit for burial, for this king would one day give up his life in order to save his people. Now, this is what causes people to worship Jesus. Maybe you're here tonight as someone who's never really quite understood why is it that sort of some people are so enthusiastic about Jesus? We can't quite get our heads around it. I'll tell you why. This is the reason. When you see that Jesus Christ is God himself, and when you see that he came down out of heaven, left the palace of heaven, into this world, became a man, allowed himself to be persecuted, and ended up dying on a cross, when you see that he did that, not because he had to, but because he chose to, not because he needed to, but because he wanted to, when you see that he wanted to do it out of love for you, and if you had been the only person in this world who needed saving, he would have done it for you, and when you see that through this you can be reconciled to God, then you stop in your tracks and you think, actually, I don't know anyone else who has died for me. It changes everything. It changes the way we see him. Jesus Christ is offering a gift to us. He's offering to take us from being enemies of God and to make us friends with God. He's offering to take us from being lost so that we might be found by God. He's offering to be our caring shepherd and our loving king. And so wise men worshipped him back then, as they still do today. For he is offering to us the greatest gift of all, which is himself. And at the end of the day, there is only two things you can do with a gift. Actually, I was reminded of this earlier on because a friend of mine told me some years ago that when he opens gifts at Christmas, he makes two piles. One is keeps and one is for Oxfam. And so every present that he opens, he decides straight away, keep or Oxfam, keep or Oxfam. Glad I'm not a relative of his. It reminds us, though, in fact, when it comes to presents, there are only two things you can do with them. So let me ask you, what will you do with Jesus Christ this Christmas? Maybe you've never thought about that before. What will you do with Jesus Christ this Christmas? I mean, will you plow on with life, get another year older, another year closer to meeting him, and give him away, so to speak, keep him on the side? Or would you turn to him and say, actually, I need to do an about turn here. I need to change. I need to realize I'm heading the wrong way down a one-way street. I ought to turn around and get back and come to him and ask for forgiveness. 27 years ago this month, someone brought me to a carol service and I didn't know Jesus Christ. I can't remember much of what was said, but I remember thinking at the time, I can sense that a gift is being offered, and that gift is too good to turn down. And so I want to ask you this Christmas, what will you do with Jesus Christ? It may be you've got more looking into Jesus Christ, and in a moment Tim will explain a course that we have running for people in just that situation. But I actually want to finish right now, as I'm going to do, with a prayer. And it's a prayer for those who want to say yes to Jesus, who say, actually, I think I've heard enough. I just want to say yes. I want to accept the gift. I want to take off the wrapping and say, that's mine, so that you know where you stand with God this Christmas and you know where one day you're going. What I'm going to do is read out the prayer, and these are the words I'll use. Okay, this is just so you can see the words. I admit that I have rejected you and tried to run my own life. Thank you that you came into the world to put me right with yourself. Please forgive me and help me to live with you as my king. Amen. A very simple prayer. What I'm going to do is pray it slowly. And if you want to make that your own, you can repeat it silently, phrase by phrase. You can echo it in your head to God, and he will certainly hear you. So I'd ask you to bow your heads. Let's close our eyes. A moment of quiet, and then I'll lead us in prayer.